This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Our aim is to educate and inform you, explore and expand your passion for aviation, and entertain you a little along the way. This episode, Boom Supersonic's XB-1 demonstrator is expected to roll out next month, and Virgin Galactic Holdings unveiled its commercial supersonic aircraft concept. Both companies are working with Rolls-Royce on supporting engine technology. China's AG-600 large seaplane had its first ocean takeoff. United Airlines is moving its Embraer ERJ-145 regional jets operated by ExpressJet to CommuteAir. Some pilots may have to get re-examined after their examiner's work was called into question. Boeing had some bad profit news and some good 737 MAX news. Airline passengers are bringing their own booze aboard, and the airline's stockpile of nuts is growing. And Allegiant Air is offering a very clever work-from-Vegas package. It's all coming up right now. Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 615 of the show where we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight. With me this episode is David Vanderhoof, our aviation historian and military aviation expert.
Hey, everybody. I had a good weekend at the museum. I shout out to Stuart and a couple of other people who showed up to walk up and start telling me stories about Airplane Geeks. And then I realized, oh, they're listeners.
Wow.
Kind of non sequiturs, but I'm looking forward to a lot of Max West stories.
We may have to explain that. Also with us is Max Trescott, host of Aviation News Talk podcast. He's also a national CFI of the year. And of course, he's an expert on the Cirrus aircraft.
And I'm the chief storyteller, apparently. I'll tell you a quick one. I spent 3 days at the shore, and man, am I feeling great. There's nothing more relaxing than just getting out there and getting your sand in the toes and getting a little sanity back.
Sand in the toes. That's uncomfortable.
I hope it wasn't too crowded.
It was crowded Saturday, Sunday, not so crowded today, but certainly not East Coast beach crowded. You know, it's believe me, way spread out compared to that. But, I had the mask off when people weren't around, put it on when people were close by. So most of the time they weren't nearby. So very, very relaxing. So I'm back.
Good, good. All right. Well, we have a lot of news stories to talk about this episode. Max Trescott is somewhat responsible for that, as we'll find out.
You're welcome.
And we better get started. So are you guys ready?
Ready from the West.
Ready in the hurricane.
First story comes from Reuters. United to drop contract with ExpressJet, dealing fatal blow. That sounds ominous.
Yes. United sent out initially a note saying that they were going to be choosing between one of their two rival regional carriers that they're partnered with. And literally within a day or two after that, they came out and said, hey, we've decided. Made me think they'd already decided the first time when they kind of gave the heads up on this. But yes, they are saying goodbye to ExpressJet, which promptly announced that they may be in big trouble. So I have a feeling that company may essentially be out of business. Now, it said that their contract is to operate 50-seat airplanes. I was thinking that most of the regionals had moved up to 70-seat and larger. So I was surprised that they were only operating 50-seat planes, which may be one of the reasons that they were the ones chosen to be cut. I just don't know.
Well, these are the Embraer ERJ-145s. And yeah, the planes operated by ExpressJet are going to CommuteAir. ExpressJet has more of them currently than CommuteAir, but CommuteAir is going to be the sole United ERJ-145 operator. And I guess the logic for this is kind of obvious, maybe. United is looking ahead and seeing themselves as becoming a smaller airline, as are most of them these days as a result of the pandemic. And United wants to consolidate these. And they do say the transition will take a number of months, which is not very specific. But both ExpressJet and CommuterAir have been around a while. So they both really formed in the 80s. ExpressJet was established in 86. Operations started in 1987. And CommuterAir was founded in 1989. So they both have a history. I don't really know what the logic is that United employed to decide which of those two was going to be the going forward commuter airline for United, but here's the result.
Yep, and undoubtedly more pilot furloughs.
Yes, yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, worse than furloughs. I mean, the airlines evaporated. It's interesting, you know, United, I'm wondering, is going to maybe work their way into getting into doing their own regional flights. It would be interesting to see that if, you know, if they've weaned off one, maybe they can take over those routes, you know, and eventually, you know, consolidate to doing what airlines did back in the day. And that was they flew everywhere and didn't subcontract.
Well, there's that little pesky scope clause issue that throws a monkey wrench in that. I don't know, you know, scope clause has been around for a long time. Of course, this is the rule, I'm not sure what you'd call it exactly, the agreement that results in a separation of pilots between the regionals that are supplying the airlines, the majors, and the majors. And it kind of has prevented an absorption of the regionals by the majors. But it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of an artificial, in many ways, concept. Maybe these are the times when that whole thing might get questioned.
Well, I mean, let's face it. We're talking about something, you know, both of these airlines were created in the early 80s. That's 40 years ago. It's hard to believe. That being said, maybe it's time to relook at scope clauses, especially these, you know, these days. So interesting. It'll be interesting to see if the other regionals start consolidating like this also with the other airlines.
All right, let's move on to really fast jets. From Avweb, we see Boom and Rolls-Royce partner on supersonic overture. And those two companies, Boom and Rolls-Royce, they announced they're exploring a Rolls-Royce propulsion system on Boom's Overture supersonic passenger aircraft. Now, this isn't the smaller Boom XB-1. That's the supersonic demonstrator that's expected to be rolled out in just 1 month. October 7th, 2020 is when they expect that demonstrator to roll out. The test program scheduled to start, this again for the XB-1, in 2021. And the Overture that they're talking about here is the full-scale, the full-sized commercial aircraft. So first we have the baby Boom. I don't know if anybody's ever called it that before, but the Boom XB-1, the demonstrator, a smaller scale version. And Rolls-Royce is going to be working with them to see if there's an existing engine architecture that can be adapted or whether they decide it would have to be a new engine. I think probably the preference is adapting an existing engine. I don't know that the supersonic program from Boom could afford a whole new engine, at least not just for the Boom aircraft.
Ah, but Rolls-Royce is really hedging their bets, you know, because we had breaking news today as we record this on that news story was from July 30th. That was Friday, and here we have Monday, and what do we have? Virgin Galactic debuts design of future Mach 3 high-speed aircraft, signs Memorandum of Understanding for Rolls-Royce. This was from TechCrunch.com. Interestingly, they are talking with Virgin Aerospace or Virgin Galactic. And the interesting thing about this article is the aircraft are very, very similar. Almost there's a concord between them, you know, an agreement that we're going to have a specific shape, very much like the original Concord. So it's interesting that Rolls-Royce is trying to get back into the supersonic airliner industry.
And maybe there's some synergies with Rolls-Royce looking at supporting Virgin Galactic and Boom. Maybe there's some commonality there. Maybe there's more commonality expected in the future than maybe evident now. I don't know. That's just all speculation. But yeah, clearly Rolls-Royce is stepping into this market, this potential market, pretty solidly. But Virgin Galactic, they want to design a Mach 3 airplane, so much faster than the Concorde. And there is a, it's not really a division, but a group under Virgin Galactic Holdings, the spaceship company, it's called TSC. And they're going to be doing this this work. And what they've just announced here is the first stage design scope, as well as this non-binding MOU with Rolls-Royce, looking to collaborate and develop engine propulsion technology. But the Virgin Galactic aircraft, as I mentioned, is targeted to be a Mach 3 airplane. In the drawings they're showing now, it's a delta wing aircraft. I think smaller than the Boom, as I recall. The Virgin Galactic plane has a capacity plan of between 9 and 19 people. But this would fly at an altitude above 60,000 feet. They want to use sustainable aviation fuel, and they also want to be able to incorporate custom cabin layouts. So they're talking about different business or first class seating arrangements in this aircraft. So the FAA is involved. The FAA's Center for Emerging Concepts and Innovation is going to work with Virgin Galactic to outline a certification framework. So here again, we've got a situation, you know, like we have with drones, I guess, where we have something new, something different in a certain way. And what should the certification process and framework be for that? So the FAA is going to be involved in that process.
Yeah, just to circle back a little bit, the Boom Overture is going to be 45 to 55 passengers, depending upon the configuration. So that would be considerably larger than this one. But you know, the thing that I'm really wondering is, going back to Boom, is have they partnered yet with one of the major airframes like Boeing or Airbus? And if they haven't, do you think they're going to have to at some point in time? I just kind of wonder, are they going to be able to get enough money to stand up a manufacturing operation to, you know, build airplanes this expensive on their own?
I think that Boom Supersonic is looking to go this on their own. We had Blake Scholl on, the founder and CEO of Boom. That was back in episode 463, so that was quite a while ago. Maybe we need an update. But one of the coolest animations I've ever seen is on the Boom website. They have, I guess as you call it, an animation of the XB1 progress. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. But what it does is it's sort of like a cutaway kind of animated thing that it shows you not only the construction and the components of the aircraft, but you know, it sort of takes you through where they are with it, and it's really, really fascinating. But I mean, yeah, these things are complicated, and I mean, there's still a lot of work to be done, particularly with Virgin Galactic. I mean, they've got to define the specific system architectures, the configurations. They still have to design the materials to use in this aircraft. And of course, then you've got the usual issues of thermal management and noise and emissions and all of that. So I think Boom is farther along than Virgin, certainly. But yeah, you know, these things are exciting. I mean, it's how could you not get excited about supersonic passenger jets?
Well, I agree. I look forward to flying one someday. I missed out on the Concorde, so I'd love to fly one of these. On the Wikipedia page for Boom Overture, it says the program cost is estimated to be $6 billion just for the Overture. And I'm thinking that's a lot of money for venture capital, which is why I just keep thinking, boy, at some point I would imagine they're going to partner with somebody.
Or maybe link up with somebody else who's got some similar kinds of objectives. We'll see. We'll see. But we learned about another interesting new aircraft. This came from our listener, Tom. This is from Popular Mechanics. The world's largest seaplane pulls off its first waterborne flight. So this is the AG-600 Kunlong. It's China's first seaplane, but it's also the world's largest seaplane. And the title, the headline title is a little bit, it's a little bit misleading, I think, because I think what happened here is the AG-600 just had its first takeoff from the ocean, because in 2018, the plane did fly from a reservoir. So this was the first time, I guess, in open ocean, open water, that this plane took off. But it can carry 50 passengers, range of 2,700 miles. And it's pretty good size, 128-foot wingspan, 121 feet long, maximum takeoff weight, 53.5 tons. And it's powered by four turboprops. These are WJ6 turboprops, which, if I'm not mistaken, these are old Soviet engines that were developed in the 60s under a different name. And I think the WJ6 nomenclature is for those built under license in China. But it's kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of a pretty cool airplane.
It's big. And China won't say it, but it definitely has military applications. I mean, it's primarily going to be a military transport. If you've been following the islands that are being popping up in the Pacific, and this is a way to supply their fleet. Instead of carrier onboard delivery, you'd go back to what we used to do in the early stages of the Cold War, and we'd have transports land next to the aircraft carriers or the ships to provide supply. Seaplanes are kind of an interesting thing, you know. What I was struck by when I watched this video was it's big, but it's amazing how low it sits in the water. You lose a lot of the hull, you know, and watching it take off, it took a lot to get up onto the step and then to get airborne. I'm sure Mr. Trescott knows what it's like to get his airplane up onto the step, but this was a lot of power requiring to get a lot of airplane up on a step.
You know, that kind of reminds me of two different airplanes. You know, one is the Albatross and the other is, of course, the Spruce Goose. What do you think, David? Which is it closer to?
The Martin Marlin.
Okay.
Yeah.
It definitely, or the Shinway US-2, which, I mean, the T-tail is definitely different than, but yeah, I argue about world's largest seaplane. How about we say world's largest active seaplane? Because I don't think anything's going to ever beat the Spruce Goose as far as a large seaplane goes. You know, my other favorite, Hercules. But yeah, it's going to be interesting watching them use these for long range patrols, you know, various things. And well, what's also interesting is we'll see what kind of exports they achieve. You know, they claim that it's set up as a fire bomber, which, you know, it's one thing using a Canadair scooper, you know, to go into a lake, but this would be a very large airplane to try to scoop up water to do fire bombing. I'm not sure that I would want to be twerking around with this in a fire and kind of thing.
All right. Well, yeah, there is some. I think there is some interest on the part of a couple of other countries in this airplane. Yeah, it remains to be seen whether this ends up being just strictly a Chinese-use aircraft, primarily by the military, or if some other companies pick up on this, because there really aren't a whole lot of choices when it comes to seaplanes, particularly large seaplanes these days.
No, I mean, the Chinook, and it's just not something that people build anymore. It's, you know, it's, there's a different, I mean, float planes are fairly common, but a seaplane is definitely unique. So we'll see what China gets away with and what they're going to do with this.
Yeah. All right. On the training, pilot training front from AOPA, pilots who flew with discredited examiner face reexamination. Uh-oh. What's happening here?
Yeah, this is definitely a big uh-oh for a select number of people in Ohio, possibly down in the North Carolina area, but I think most of this was in Ohio. The FAA announced, oh gosh, it's been more than a week now, that they are going to require pilots who took check rides with a particular FAA inspector and examiner from 2008 through 2019, think of that, that's an 11, 12-year period, to take their check rides over again. You can just imagine that is a huge, huge, huge amount of work on the part of the pilots because, you know, you've got the oral portion that you've got to go through. I mean, you got to brush up on everything. You got to brush up on your maneuvers. And I talked with Jason Blair last week about this to kind of find out, hey, why does this happen and how often does it happen? And he says it doesn't happen all that often, but in the past there have been cases where the FAA has required similar reexaminations when DPEs, that's pilot examiners, have either issued certificates for applicants that didn't meet the training experience requirements. So these people, you know, were lacking some hours or, you know, lacking something else to qualify for the check ride. Doing short check rides that don't meet the standards. He said there have been some pay-to-pass situations where people have basically, you know, paid to get their license and have, in some cases, haven't actually flown. And there are other folks who haven't, you know, weren't English proficient, for example. Now, that's not the case with this particular gentleman because we don't know exactly what was going on with him. There was a bit of a hint as to, you know, what might have been going on. I'll see if I can find that here in the story. It said the competence airman tested during the time period in question and re-examine of the airman's qualifications to hold their certificates and or ratings as necessary in the interest of safety. They believe that he issued certificates and or ratings when airmen did not demonstrate the qualifications to hold the certificate and or rating for which they were tested. Now, they've already sent out letters to everybody to whom this applies to. Interestingly, that's a pretty short time frame. People who got these letters were told they had 15 days to come in and take their check ride with an FAA examiner, which is not a lot of time to get ready. Or they were told that they can deposit their certificate with the local FAA until they're ready to take that. So basically, that's kind of like saying, hey, you're surrendering your certificate until you're ready to take your check ride. So the FAA is taking this very, very seriously. There are some exemptions where people won't have to take another check ride. For example, if someone took a sport pilot certificate or a recreational pilot certificate with this gentleman, then if they subsequently, for example, did their private or their commercial with a different examiner, then they don't have to be re-examined. But there are some where just plain out, if you took, for example, your ATP with this gentleman or any CFI certificate, there is no out. You must take a whole new check ride again. And I'll tell you, ATP and CFIs, those are substantial check rides, require a lot of preparation for. So it's highly unfortunate that this occurred. And it does seem like the FAA is taking a hard look at these kinds of situations and that we might be hearing about more of these kinds of things in the future. I talked about this last week on Aviation News Talk, and the one thing I didn't say, which I should have said if I had remembered, is that, you know, I think pilots often kind of are happy to go to the examiner who they think is easy and, you know, shortcuts and stuff like this. This shows you where that may not be a great strategy. So if there's an examiner in your area that everyone is going to because it's so easy to pass with him, just be aware you may find yourself in this kind of situation in the future where suddenly that check ride you took before no longer counts.
It seems like the FAA really couldn't take any other course of action with this situation, right? I mean, they had to treat it this way, it seems to me.
Yeah, it's a safety issue. It's the same as, you know, finding a safety issue on an airplane. This is exactly the same thing.
Yeah, but if it was Pakistan, we wouldn't have. They wouldn't have had this problem.
Oh yeah.
But in all, I jest. But it's and I'm asking this seriously. What kind of monitoring do CFIs have? How would the FAA know that there's an issue with this individual and his student base?
It's a good question. I don't know how they kind of determined there was an issue in this particular case. This is kind of an unusual one because he was an inspector working for the FAA as an employee for most of the time period. Usually this is with DPEs who are essentially designated by the FAA but aren't FAA employees. I do know that the FAA keeps a tremendous amount of data, statistics that they amalgamate on check rides, both the number of check rides given, things like that. So there were, and pass rates, you know. So for example, if you were to come across an examiner whose pass rate for the last few months was 100%, you know, that's probably a red flag right there in the system. That might indicate a situation where, you know, maybe the examiner is, taking a little money to guarantee that everybody passes or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, there are baselines where they know that on average, you know, a certain percentage of people don't pass particular check rides. So that would probably be one of the big flags, you know, examiner, you know, A in whatever state, you know, has done a zillion check rides in the last few months and everybody passes. There's a problem there.
Oh, they're not CFI of the year when that happens. So I just
no, they're kind of, you know, dog of the industry. Yeah, I mean, these are unfortunate kinds of things, and they bring a lot of discredit. And fortunately, it's just a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of examiners, you know, that do this, but it still exists.
I think that's just, we can call that just human nature. Eventually, yep, Somebody will do something, you know.
Yep, looking for a shortcut.
Speaking of human nature, how about Boeing's revenue?
Boeing just announced their second quarter numbers, and we see a $2.4 billion net loss. And again, that's for the second quarter alone. Their revenue fell by a quarter, 25%, to $11.8 billion. And all that driven by a 71% drop in commercial airplane deliveries. So that's you're going to have that kind of result when you have your business drop off like that.
Well, thank goodness they had a huge backlog, which will help a little bit, but I'm sure a lot of that backlog has also started to disappear. So, you know, it's going to be a real challenge for them. And, you know, no one really knows how quickly all this is going to come back. So I'm sure 3 years is a guess.
Now there's some 737 MAX news. Speaking of Boeing.
I used to complain about tankers, but now I think I have a new.
You're tired of talking about it, huh? So MAX, what do we have here from the FAA?
Well, this just came out a couple of hours ago. The FAA has basically said that they are, moving forward with certification, that it's looking good. They've given preliminary approval. They've said that they do want some more changes. Apparently, there's a software patch that they still want to do and some key sensors that they want to do checking on. But it sounds like they've been through the whole application for recertification and said, yeah, you know what, this looks like it's just about a done deal. And just go ahead and go back and make these few minor changes. And that's fantastic news. I mean, you think about it, it's been, about a year and a half, roughly, that this aircraft has been grounded. I mean, this is a really long period of time to work through all the issues. Obviously, the issues were substantial. And as you would expect with a situation like this, undoubtedly, the FAA went through with a fine-tooth comb, which is why they ended up catching some things that they hadn't originally known about when the crashes occurred. So this is good. I mean, this is going to be a extremely well-designed airplane, I think, by the time we get done with this. And it looks like the end is in sight. So that is great news for Boeing and for the airlines that are looking to fly these aircraft again.
So there's one, I guess just one, remaining process item that has to be accomplished, and that is that there is actually a 45-day public comment period where if interested parties have something to say about the proposed directive, then you have 45 days to make that known. And then the FAA has to analyze that feedback and respond to it. I guess how long that takes depends on how much feedback they receive and the nature of it. So it's going to be at least a couple of months before the plane is cleared to fly again. And then, of course, we have the issue of will airlines expect to want to be flying the airplane in the midst of whatever's going on a couple of months from now. So that's not clear either. But yeah, Max, you're right. I mean, this is good news for Boeing. Another thing we have is, of course, how are the other regulatory bodies in other countries going to respond to this?
Yeah, that was my thing. It was like, okay, does EASA now do their own thing parallel, or do they wait till everything's done with the FAA? It's interesting to see what will happen with other foreign regulators, how they'll handle it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've seen in the news passengers on commercial flights causing some problems. We've seen passengers who refuse to wear a mask result in turnbacks of the flight, which is not very much fun for the rest of the passengers, not to mention the crew and all. But
evidently the responses, though, when they have turned around, have been very positive by the people on the airplanes. Even though it's a pain in the neck, everybody seems to think it's the right thing to do. So
yes, and I think I would be in that position myself. Enough with people that are refusing to comply. Yeah, you know, I'm not a big fan of the public should act like sheep or anything like that. But sometimes you have to follow the rules.
I would be really upset if somebody had actually brought on their horse, their pony, and the pony wasn't masked. Yeah. So it's just...
Isn't that funny? We haven't been complaining about these animals on airplanes in a long time. We've had big...
No, we've got new types of animals on the flights. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly.
But we have one other thing that passengers are doing recently on the flights. Max, tell us about this one.
Well, things are constantly changing. New situations create new workarounds by passengers. And Southwest has kind of brought up a new issue, which is passengers, they're bringing their own booze on board and drinking it on board. And of course, this is one of those unintended consequences that I certainly never thought of. A lot of airlines have stopped serving drinks of any kind on aircraft simply because they want to minimize contact between their employees and the passengers. So people have had to bring their own beverages, but it turns out they've been bringing some illegal beverages onto the airplane. And so Southwest has now changed their in-flight cabin announcements. In addition to all of the things that will get you on the naughty list in the past, things like smoking in the lavatory and electronic cigarettes or, futzing with a smoke detector in the lavatory. Now they're also announcing it is also prohibited to consume alcohol that you've brought. So I guess there are some people who have cleverly bought the cheap alcohol in the terminal and brought that on board rather than paying for more expensive booze on the airplane. And the airlines are saying, hey, you know what? We're seeing an increase in this. And you got to cut that out. And I don't think it's because, Southwest makes a lot of money from selling alcohol. I think that, they need to, be able to regulate how much people are drinking on the aircraft because, they're not allowed to have drunk people on the aircraft. It's against the FARs. So they are required to cut people off if they, believe that they have, gotten tipsy. Kind of hard to do that if people are bringing their own booze on board.
They can always just get loaded up on the air, get loaded up in the terminal, and then go aboard the airplane, and with a mask on, you'll never know. All right,
Yeah, maybe.
Well, you might if they're stumbling around. The airlines are actually required to not allow drunk people to board the aircraft. Now the question is, how do you determine that or not? But yeah, if they, you know, have a good idea that someone's drunk, that person will be denied boarding, you know, right at the gate. That's part of the FARs.
So I wonder what they're going to do if someone is discovered with alcohol that they brought onto the plane. Not inebriated or anything. I mean, if you don't wear your mask, you know, the plane may go back. But if you have a flask of some really nice bourbon with you, does that mean the plane is going to turn back as well? You know, that kind of a turn back, if I was a passenger, I wouldn't be too thrilled with.
The flight attendant and the flight crew will confiscate it for the jungle juice later on in the overnight stay, you know, the old run around where you, whatever the leftovers were, you poured into a glass and chugged it away. So, I mean, it will be confiscated for your own safety, and I'm sure that it will be not gone to waste.
Well, they do say here in the memo that went out that when people are caught with their drinks, the flight attendants have been told to use their hospitality to explain the policy, ask that passengers discard open beverages, and they say refrain from confiscating sealed containers and allow customers to stow those for the remainder of the flight. Mm. So, no, I don't think they're going to be turning back unless people get belligerent and refuse to follow the instructions of a crew member, in which case I can tell you, you do not want to do that. You know, it's, I mean, people need to understand you don't give lip to flight attendants because, you know, there are federal regulations that say, you know, if you don't follow crew member order, hey, you know, you're subject to arrest. And, you know, people don't get it. They think they can mess around on the airplane. Nope, you don't. I'll tell you, when I'm seated in the exit row, you know, I like to joke around, but I never joke around when they're asking me about, you know, do you understand these instructions? Because I want that good seat. And I have, yeah. You know, I have heard stories of people being pulled out of those seats because they kind of joke around. They don't answer the question. And then even after they go, oh, yeah, no, I was just joking. I really do speak English. They're like, nope, sorry, out of here. And, you know, I think that makes sense.
That's the way it should be.
It's serious business. You know, you could be, you know, the person responsible for either, you know, people getting out safely or not getting out safely. And you have to take that responsibility seriously. And yes, I love those aisle seats. Yes.
Okay. But now we really need to talk about some serious news.
Oh, yeah.
This is tragic. And I really think we need to talk about this and focus on it because when I read this headline, it really upset me. Evidently, there's a huge surplus of American Airlines nuts.
That's it. And we're not talking about the people that love flying on the airline. We're talking about the nuts that they serve up in first class. I don't think they serve many of them in economy anymore.
And this story isn't peanuts.
This is another one of these unintended consequences. The company that's been supplying American Airlines with its first-class nut mix for 30 years has a surplus of nuts as business has dropped by about 90%. No surprise. Typically, they roast 2.4 million pounds of nuts per year, most of which go to the airlines. But right now, those nuts are just kind of sitting on the shelf. They've got 70,000 bags of nuts sitting around, mostly cashew, almond, walnut, pecan mix. Mm. Oh, and so yummy. They have decided to go online and start selling those nuts. So if you are unable to fly right now and you're missing those nuts, they have 1.25-pound bags for $12.95, 7.5-pound bags for $48, shipping included. And you know what? It's funny. Literally, my mouth is watering right now as I'm talking about this story. Now, Max, you have always talked about one of your pleasures of traveling first class, which would be?
Or business class on United Trans-Pacific was the hot nuts. Oh, God, I used to love the little ramekin with those hot nuts in there.
No, hot nuts, I think of, you know, like being in Manhattan at Christmas. And there are these vendors that just, you know, just But you know, the only thing would be better than this would be if Biscoffs were like a crisis, and you could, but you know, Nutserve, it's really kind of, I'm sure we're going to get more stories like this because the supply chains are, you know, airlines are changing their catering, you know, and unintended consequences. I mean, this is, there's more to just a flight than just people boarding the airplane and getting up and going, you know. I mean, what kind of stock do they have on for the catering for all of the sodas and the waters and the juices, you know? Those effects trickle down through the rest of the, you know, and we might start hearing that the caterers are starting to lay off people because there aren't any, and there's not enough to support them there, you know.
I did see a story, actually, that someone had taken their, you know, CARES funding, some catering companies, and yet had still laid off, you know, people. So, you know, apparently the government's looking into, you know, that. So, yes, caterers have been laid off already. It doesn't say here in this story, but my recollection is that it's at greatnuts.com. So anybody who wants to order some of these nuts. Now, Max, you and I were communicating over the weekend. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Do you remember what that was about?
You sent something. You sent some kind of a package to me.
Huh. Now, you're on the road right now, right? So you haven't seen the package.
I haven't seen the package. I'm sort of self-quarantined in the middle of Pennsylvania right now.
Well, when we signed on here today, I was wearing my silly sunflower sunglasses here. I assure you, I did not send you sunglasses.
Oh, good.
However, can you possibly guess what might be waiting for you when you get home?
You didn't send me nuts, did you?
I sent you nuts.
Yay! Oh, God. All right.
You have a 1¼-pound bag of nuts.
Are they airline
nuts?
Airline nuts.
Oh, yeah. No. The story we just read?
Yeah.
Those, you have some of those waiting for you at home right now.
Oh, I love it. Oh, that's great.
Oh. Okay, Trescott, you need to put your glasses back on.
That's right. and by the way, I've done a lot of airline travel over the last year or two, and a lot of it was in first class often because it was booked on short notice and the price difference wasn't that much. And every time I got my serving of nuts, I would take a photo of it and send it to Max.
That's right. That's right. Oh, that's brilliant. Oh.
So finally you get some as well.
I can't wait to get home. I can't wait to get home.
Put your glasses on.
No, okay. So I ordered these from Amazon because I just thought it would be fun and silly. All right, here we go.
Well, I got to get the title of Sunflower Man also.
It's just kind of fun being silly occasionally with the other co-host, and so I ordered some silly glasses.
They'll be in the show notes, folks.
Because hey, these are crazy times. You got to figure out how to make a little fun occasionally.
I know we need it. We need some levity.
Levity.
And nuts. You know, we need nuts as well.
And nuts. We have a lot of nuts.
I was going to say the three of us aren't enough there.
Oh, dear.
All right. One last item from USA Today. Well, let me just mention the article, the surplus of American nuts comes from onemileatatime.com. Ben always writes great content over there. And, of course, we'll have a link to that in the show notes. But from USA Today, we see Viva Las Remote Office, Allegiant Air to pitch work from Vegas travel packages to boost bookings. This sounds like it might be an interesting idea.
Yeah, I love creative ideas. I worked in marketing for a while when I was at HP before I went into sales. And I, you know, marketing is all about figuring out, I mean, among other things, how can you modify your product in a way that makes it more attractive to customers? And, of course, when you have all these empty hotel rooms in Las Vegas and you have all these empty airline seats, obviously there's a possible mutual benefit to working together. And so Allegiant is now peddling packages that include both nonstop airline tickets and a hotel room, and they're basically pitching it as fly, stay, work, and play. So folks who are working at home anyway, their pitch is, well, heck, you can work at home just as well from a hotel room in Las Vegas, so why don't you hop on an Allegiant and we'll give you this package deal where you might also have a little fun on the side while you're working. And the funny thing is, your boss will probably never know. So I think this is kind of clever. It's a perfect program for Allegiant to have been a partner in this. I don't know if people know, but Allegiant has essentially two major hubs in the U.S. Maybe they've got a third one now, but one was Sanford, Florida, which is an airport just outside of Orlando, which they flew into because it's just very low cost compared to Orlando. And the other was Las Vegas. And if you look at their route map, essentially you see spokes radiating out from these two hubs, and they fly to many, 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 smaller, medium-sized cities. For example, I know that they've had a flight from Elmira, New York, which is where I used to fly out of when I was growing up in northern Pennsylvania, down to Florida. So you can't really fly to it, – it's kind of a hub and spoke, but with kind of a limited hubs and locations you can go to. But if you happen to be in cities like Indianapolis, you can have a four-night weekday stay at the MGM Grand in mid-September for $340, which includes a round-trip airfare and hotel, but excludes seat assignments and baggage and hotel resort fees. Well, that's certainly going to add more money to it.
Wait till your boss sees the expense report for the hotel wireless fee. I was working from home, sort of.
But it's a clever idea.
It's a fantastic idea.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. And in the spirit of what we were talking about earlier, which is how do we put more fun into these crazy times? Yeah, I'm sure there's some people going to go, this is great. I am so tired of these four walls. I'm going to hop on that airliner. We are going to go to Las Vegas. And nobody will ever know that all those instant messages were coming from the side of the pool at the MGM Grand.
Yeah, these times definitely call for creative ideas, and not just in the airlines or other aviation companies, but everything. But at least with respect to the airlines and things that we talk about here, you can throw up your hands and say the sky is falling, which it is, and pull your hair out, figuratively. Or you can come up.
Those of you that have hair.
Sorry, Max. Yeah.
No problem.
Or you can, take the opportunity to think of something completely unexpected, something that's something that you would never even think about a year ago or 6 months ago, let's say. And so, I think Allegiant is doing something that represents some really good thinking and trying to make the best out of a situation that's, rather unpleasant. All right, we have a couple of shout-outs. David, do you want to mention one of our favorite past guests?
First of all, Bill, congratulations. We miss you now that you're not with that organization, otherwise known as the NASA History Office. But most of all, happy birthday. And hopefully we know you listen to the show, and we know you've moved to Connecticut. So hopefully you'll get to see Max occasionally.
Oh, Massachusetts, actually.
Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Right.
Just north.
New England. How's that sound? We'll round it off to New England.
That works.
But Bill has been very good to us over the years, it's one thing when you get a guest, but it's another when you discover a friend. Bill has been good to me too. When I was sick, I got a gazillion books to read from NASA's History Office. We miss you, Bill. Good luck with the rest of your life, but hopefully we'll have you on and you can send us notes saying how wonderful we are when we screw up talking about NASA.
Yeah, Bill Barry does. He keeps us honest, which is good. As do many of you listening, including another friend of ours that we want to mention, and that's our main man, Micah. Happy birthday to Micah.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear main man. Happy birthday to you.
and many more.
Very good. Very good. Nice voice there, David.
Now, wait a minute. That song is...
It's no longer trademarked. We're okay.
Okay, that was my question. Is that gone into the public domain?
Yes.
Do we have to cut that from the show?
No, we don't.
No, it's actually in the public domain now.
Finally. Also, just a reminder, we mentioned this last episode. For a limited time, pilotpartner.net is offering a discount code for Airplane Geeks listeners. That code is AirplaneGeeks1818. And if you wonder why 18, well, that's because you get an 18-month membership at Pilot Partner for the price of 12. And again, we want to thank Ken for making that available to Airplane Geeks listeners. All right, we're going to wrap this up. A little bit of a short episode. We're under sort of a...
I've got bad weather. Max is on the road, and Trescott is wearing funky glasses. So therefore, it's probably the time for the three of us to call it an evening.
Right. So thanks for listening. Find us at airplanegeeks.com. You'll find show notes there. You can find us on social media. You can learn more about us. And we even have a little donate button there if you'd like to contribute to the cause, help us pay for all of this. And, of course, as always, you can go directly to the show notes for this episode, this being number 615. Well, that's at airplanegeeks.com/615. And the email address is thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. Look forward to hearing from you. All right, David Vanderhoof, where do folks find you online?
Oh, Twitter, Facebook, not on TikTok. But you can also find me on our Slack listener team. And like Max said, the email address to get your invite is thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. And we'll be happy to send you an invite and join the conversation. And, of course, there's always Friday mornings with that guy, Max Flight, on the UAV Digest.
That's right. And I've got my voice back. If you listened to the last episode of the UAV Digest, I just totally lost my voice that day. So David had to carry the weight of that episode. So thanks for doing that, David. Max Trescott, where do we find you?
All the usual places. And if you haven't gone out to my YouTube channel, just search for Aviation News Talk. Click on subscribe there. Got some new videos up there and more coming, so you might enjoy that. And, of course, the place to email me would be at aviationnewstalk.com. Just click on contact at the top of the page, and you can shoot me an email.
Great. You can find me on LinkedIn. Look for Max Flight. Also with David at uavdigest.com. And with Mary Kirby talking about the passenger experience at paxxpodcast.com. So please join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.
Keep the blue side up.
And thanks for listening.